Hey, everyone, and welcome back to The Perspective. My name's Ethan, and your hosts for the evening are Dave Warnock and Kenneth Leonard. How are you guys doing?
Man, I love that intro. I've told you that before. It is killer. Damn, it's good. Oh, I love it.
Lovely Cynthia McDonald to give credit to for making
it. Oh, Cynthia. She's the best.
It gets me every week. It just gets me really excited. I'll be jumping up and down in the green room. Can't wait for the show to start. Anxious as ever, wanting everything to go smoothly. But yeah, it's a great intro.
It is.
But for those who don't know, some congrats are in order.
Oh, Kenneth Leonard tied the knot.
Married. Woo! Congratulations, Kenneth.
That's right. Thanks, guys.
Does it feel any different?
Another one bites the dust.
I do not feel any different. Everything is business as usual.
Well, I met your sweetheart when we were up there in June in Chicago. We all hung out together, and we got to meet her. So, you got a good one, man. Good job. Yeah,
you know, I'm definitely punching above my weight. So, that's good. Yeah,
Kenneth, don't undersell yourself. You are a great man.
Well, stop it.
Stop it, you too.
Anyways, do you both want to get into calls?
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Our first caller, following up from last week, wants to talk about her experiences with demonology. So, Robin, you are on with Kenneth and Dave. How are you?
Hello, how are you?
Hey, Robin. Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes,
you can.
A little bit. I just audio last week was a problem.
No, you're coming through loud and clear now.
Oh, perfect. Okay. How are you guys?
Good. Yeah.
Can't complain.
It's a good Tuesday night. Is it Tuesday? Yeah, it's Tuesday night. So yeah, I love Tuesday nights.
It's my wine night, so I got my wine with me. So I might be a little bit disorganized, but hopefully not.
I got a little bourbon going already, so we'll be fine.
Ooh, I might have some bourbon later. I love bourbon.
anyway, just really quick, I wanted to just double check. Are you on speakerphone by any chance, Robin?
Yeah, I use that because I'm a little bit hard of hearing, and it's easier for me to hear that way. Would you like me to try not using speakerphone?
In the interest of having our audience be able to hear you, it might be a little bit better if you're speaking like as close as you can into that headset.
Is this better?
Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
A little bit? Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit hard for me to hear you guys, but I'm going to try my best here. Because I have it off the speaker now. But yeah, last week I briefly mentioned that I knew a little bit about demonology and had some personal experiences with that. And I had a fun time reading through the chat because I like to re-listen to what I was saying to see how I can improve my argument and kind of where I went wrong a little bit. But I would like to briefly mention the fact that I think, and I hate to say it this way, but I think the chat got a little bit condescending about what I was saying about demonology, just my brief mentioning of it.
Damn it, chat.
Chatters, do better. Do betters, Chatter. Come on, do betters.
Be better.
No, I don't mean that as an insult because, I mean, I was an atheist for most of my life. And so I understand where they're coming from. I mean, I still, as a Christian, like to make fun of Christians. And it's fun. It's very entertaining. But it's not great when you're trying to actually learn about something. So I would encourage people to have a little bit of an open mind. But yeah, I mean, to kick things off, I guess the first thing I need to start off with is what your guys' definition or concept of demons is. Like, if you were, I'm going to say if you're a Christian, but if you were to imagine what a demon was, what would they look like? What would their function be?
It's an interesting question.
You want to go first, Kenneth, and I'll follow up on that.
So it's funny because I think the era of evangelicalism that I grew up in was a funny one for this. Dave, did you ever read a guy named Frank Peretti?
Oh yeah.
Darkness, exactly. The darkness. Exactly. Yeah. So there was this guy, he was a novelist, a Christian novelist, wrote a book called This Present Darkness that was about like a war happening in this small town with angels and demons. And I read that when I was like a little kid, and it colored how I thought about what demons were. If I'm looking at the Bible, the idea of a demon is just an angel that's been, you know,
cast out of God's presence, right? An angel that's now playing for the other team, as it were. And the descriptions of angels in the Bible are frankly like super fucking weird. You get these like creatures with like, you know, four sets of wings and like, so the descriptions of angels and demons are all over the map. I'm not sure. I know that in our culture, we tend to sort of anthropomorphize them. We tend to look at them, you know, we see depictions in like Renaissance art of like cherubs and stuff. And we tend to think of angels as being like people, but yeah, I don't know. In my experience, when people talk about angels and demons, I have no idea what they're talking about until they tell me what they mean.
Yeah. My perspective to follow up on that is that I came from a lifetime of evangelical Christianity, charismatic Pentecostal branding, and we believed our church culture believed in angels and demons. And I've been in years past, I've been in situations where we were casting demons out, and I've known of meetings where the people would writhe on the floor like a snake and scream as the demon supposedly exited the person. We got our understanding of that as Kenneth said, from our understanding of the Bible, that Satan fell down from heaven, and a third of the angels rebelled with him, and they became demons on the earth, and they began to be Satan's henchmen, if you will. You know, you got the picture of a gangster leader, Satan, and all of his hitmen out there, and yeah. And he's sending all the demons around to inflict damage on Christians and to do bad things in the world. And so there's this spiritual war going on, as Kenneth mentioned. Frank Peretti tapped into that and wrote a bestseller. His follow-up book was Piercing the Darkness. But yeah, that was the understanding that I had. Now, as an atheist, having been an atheist for 10 or 12 years now, I look at the world as a materialist. I look at things that can be demonstrated to be true. So I don't see any evidence for demons. I don't see any evidence for angels. I don't see any evidence for Satan or God. And so I look at the world as through the lens of show me some evidence. Don't tell me about what you believe is true or what you think might be there or things that you get, ideas that you get from an archaic book or a series of books. So I don't look at the world through the lens of there being a spiritual war going on. I don't think there is. And so when people talk about demons and demon activity, I don't see any evidence for that. I don't see how that can be a possible explanation for anything that's going on around us. It just doesn't make any sense to me that there would be if in fact God was all powerful and all knowing and all loving, why would he allow there to be, and I know all the answers for that, free will and the fall of man and all that stuff. So don't come at me with that. I know all those answers. I used to give them, but it makes no rational sense for an all loving God to allow Satan and all his henchmen to be running around the earth, causing damage and killing people and hurting people and inspiring crazy people to rape young girls and to be, you know, like Charles Manson, to be a serial killer. That doesn't make any sense to me, that God would respect that guy's free will more than he would care for the safety of an innocent little girl. So those kind of things don't make sense to me anymore, that there are demons and things like that around the earth. So that's probably more of an answer than you wanted, but I kind of wanted to just lay the groundwork for where I'm coming from as we talk about demonology. Is that fair?
Setting the tone.
Is that?
Yeah,
are you there?
I mean, oh. I think that's totally fair. I mean, there's a ton to unpack. Sorry, I'm switching. So, like, in order to hear you guys, I have to switch to my speaker just because, like I said, I'm hard of hearing, and so I'm talking into my phone now, not on speakerphone. So there's a slight delay. That's why.
Okay.
But I think that's totally valid. And I agree with some points there. I actually come from the opposite perspective. So I grew up I decided to be an atheist in my young teenage years. And it wasn't until middle of college where I decided to become a Christian. So I kind of come from the opposite perspective. So that leads me to kind of have almost a middle ground, if you will. I'm not evangelical at all. I'm non-denominational in my belief. I think the denominations do a lot to the vibe, but that's neither here nor there. But there was a lot to unpack with what you said there. So I think I'm just going to start off with, I took some notes here. I was prepping this discussion a bit earlier. Just my groundwork is, I think defining things is really important, because if you don't have definitions to function with, that leads to a lot of disagreement just from misunderstanding.
Exactly.
So, I suppose I'll begin with just a brief history of my concept of a demon. Let me see here. So I'm going to go from a biblical perspective here, and I don't know how much you know about this, but are you guys familiar with the Nephilim and the Tower of Babel?
Sure.
In the Bible?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I come from the perspective that, again, and I don't necessarily state that these things are, a lot of the Bible is poetry, it's not necessarily fact. And while there is some archaeological evidence from the Tower of Babel, again, I don't know exactly if it's fact or it's poetry. But the concept of the Tower of Babel being that people attempted to reach God and through a tower, and God says no, and the tower falls, and people become separated by cultures and ideas and languages.
Can we really quickly?
Oh yeah,
because I love talking about this with believers. So what was the reason in Genesis why God confused everybody with the languages? Why was the tower a problem for God?
Well, the tower was initially a problem, and again, I don't have all the answers, so I'm not going to claim this is, an answer for everybody. If people will come and reach God themselves, I have a lot of reasons for thinking about this. So I'm going to quickly divulge into that. If people reach God, let's imagine a world where, as an atheist, I would say this might be an ideal perspective, but where everyone's able to physically see God and we can see what he is, and we all are like, okay, God is real. Well, some might see that as an ideal society. However, I do not. I see that as a not ideal society. And here's why. It's because if we can all see God, and we can all see that he's there, our reasons for believing become a little bit tainted. We become tainted in the sense that we're believing out of fear rather than we're believing from our hearts. And we're actually changing our hearts. So that's kind of why I think that's part of the issue. Also, it's an issue of power and trying to think that you can do things like that.
Wouldn't you say that many Christians believe out of fear anyway now? Fear of punishment?
I agree with that. So
that doesn't make sense.
That's not why. I mean, Christ goes into that deeply, why you shouldn't believe out of fear. It's a false sense of belief. It kind of goes into the Pharisees and how why they believed and why they function out of laws and what, Christ is necessary. But
I
want to go back to the topic of demonology. Oh,
yeah, just 1 second, because I just wanted to make this quick point, because this is, you're touching on so much interesting stuff. So I actually pulled up Genesis 11 so I could read this. So this is the story of the Tower of Babel for anybody who doesn't know. So I'm just reading it from Bible Gateways, this is New International Version. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. They said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. That's why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. So the problem in the story, in the narrative there, it isn't that they were trying to reach heaven. They were building a tower that went up into the heavens, up into the sky. They wanted to build a really tall building together. It was a cooperative effort of all these people coming together to build a city, a great city. And in the story, God says, whoa, whoa, whoa. If all these people work together, there's nothing they won't be able to do. And we can't have that. As a Christian, I never thought about it. But as an atheist, I read that and I go, that's a very interesting story. The problem that and it you is, see it through it Genesis, is. The problem with the snake is the snake gives Adam and Eve knowledge. The problem with the Tower of Babel is people working together. God doesn't want the people working together. It's just, I find it interesting.
No, it's not that. I think, and I'm going to say this just as like a premonition, not because I don't want to talk about this. It's because I'm afraid I'm going to run out of time. If I dive too deep into this, I'm not able to touch on the topics that I actually really want to get on today. So I'm totally willing to talk about this in depth, either privately or another time. But yeah. I definitely think you're making a good point there. I think that you're simplifying the concept a little bit. But if I may just move on, I don't mean to cut you short or say that you're not making a good point or out of fear or anything like that. I do like to talk about these things. But anyways.
I agree. Rather than keep going on this anymore, let's talk about the demonology.
Let's talk about the demon stuff.
But please call into another show. I'll talk about these other things because there is a wealth of conversation there. And I personally would love to delve into your understanding or your definition of your change from being an atheist to a Christian.
That I know.
You decided to be an atheist and then you decided to be a Christian. Those that terminology there.
A casual atheist either. I was a vehement atheist.
Well, and as we transition into the demon stuff, I do also want to make one more little quick point is that you said the thing about how it would be a problem if people could just see God, because they'd be compelled to believe in him out of some sort of fear. If the Bible's to be believed, Satan and all of those demons have seen God, but they don't follow him. So I don't know why it would be a problem for us.
But they believe in him. They definitely acknowledge him.
Sure. But why don't they follow him? I mean, so if all the people at Babel saw God.
Why don't they? Well, then, I'm going to go into that really briefly here.
Okay. All right. I'll stop derailing you. Sorry. Don't mind me and my little ADD brain.
My next two sentences or so here is going to touch on that. And then I'm going to dive into my personal experience, if that's okay. I'm just setting a premonition for my definition and my concept of demons. So anyways, Tower of Babel spreads everybody out. And they end up worshiping other gods. And in doing so, the Bible basically, in the short of itself, says that God's going to assign them different rulers over them. And the biblical concept of this is the Nephilim, which are giants that are allegedly half God, half man. And in the sense of this, the role of the Nephilim and a role of other demons, as we learn throughout the Bible, is they're basically exchanging knowledge for power. And so that the reason for not going along with God is that they can gain power over man, material power, in exchange for their worship. This is another whole rabbit hole that we could go down another time that goes into Egyptology, and we can see some archaeological evidence for things like this. But I'm going to, for the sake of time, just lay that out there as maybe a concept for next week or something. But that is something that the Bible mentions. So basically demons, their whole role is, higher demons at least, is to exchange power, or they're going to get power and they're going to give humanity knowledge and a sense of control. And that, again, Egyptology, even World War II, Holocaust, has a lot to do with that whole concept. So moving right along.
I can't. I can't move right along from that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was letting
you move right along. I tried. I just couldn't. Oh gosh, sorry.
This is a huge rabbit hole. This is going to be a huge rabbit hole.
You're saying that the Holocaust was caused by demon activity?
No. I'm not saying it's caused. I'm saying
help me understand what you said.
There's a tie-in. So do you know about Hitler's circle? And this is well documented, actually. You can look into this. Basically, Hitler's inner circle, Heinrich and everybody, they would engage in what was called, they would have a circle where they would try to channel demons in order to gain knowledge and power, like I said. And we see during World War II that the demons suddenly have a rise in intellectual capacity, and they are so innovative beyond anybody else. And the Germans believed that this was the cause, is that they would continue to engage in sacrifices, human sacrifice, things of this nature. And you can Google this.
You can Google fucking anything. So I don't know about all that stuff. But
This is actually really true.
I mean,
documentaries that you can find.
You can find documentaries saying the Earth is flat.
The fact that his.
True.
Okay, the fact.
You, That hey, Robin, inner circle, yes.
The fact that his inner circle believed a certain thing and did certain practices in no way proves that what they believed was true.
No, you do know that, right? I agree with
okay.
you.
Okay, all right. So that proves nothing. That proves nothing.
I'm saying that this is what you asked me what happened. I'm telling you what happened and why.
Okay.
Let's dive into that.
All right, move on.
Let's get the demon definition, because so far, like the whole Nephilim thing is I mean, like, yeah, I know there's stories in the Bible about, you know, giant beings with great strength and all this stuff. I know that folks like Cotton Mather have, back in the day thought they'd found remains of Nephilim in like upstate New York that turned out to be like woolly mammoth bones.
Right.
So I don't know what any of this has to do with demons.
You know, I'm not claiming, again, this is me saying that I think there is some archaeological evidence to support it. And again, I have a whole rabbit hole. Me and my boyfriend's a chemist. He's extremely intelligent. He's actually taught me most of what I know. And he writes a lot of like things about this kind of thing. I'm actually about to be featured in a book about my testimony on demonology a little bit. Cool. For the next couple months here. But it's basically something that what you guys mentioned earlier, the concept of the fallen angel is actually a really decent definition. But demons are essentially the anti-God, right? They're going to go against God's order, God's will. Things that are supposed to happen that are good, that we can all realize that are good. That's a very fundamental, broad stroke definition of a demon. And their function on Earth, from my personal experience, from what I've seen and what I've felt, is more to incite, at least the lower level from, I'm going to get into my personal testimony here. I'm going to preface this with the fact that personal testimony is in no way proof, or like, I think multiple accounts of personal testimony are proof, but my individual testimony in and of itself is not proof of anything. Just something that's interesting to talk about. So anyways, lower level demons, at least, they kind of function like rats. They infest, and their concept is to incite fear in people. And the inciting of fear turns them away from God and turns them away from what is good. It leads them into madness, is their goal. So would you like me to divulge that a little bit more? Or would you like me to turn?
Well, I just would want to know how you...
You're saying you have personal experience with demons. So
yeah.
What does that look like?
Yes.
And why would that be a thing that you've experienced it? Yeah. What's the end game here? I guess what I'm going to want to get to.
Yeah, the end game. Yeah. So as I said, I went from being an atheist to a Christian. As an atheist, I had zero experience with demons or anything like that. And from my insight now, it seems that the reason that I didn't really have much experience, and again, I kind of know what already the counter argument to this is, that, well, you weren't thinking about it, so you didn't see anything. But the reason is that as being an atheist, you're kind of, in a way, aligning yourself with that, so they have no reason to bother you.
So because you're making so many claims. You're making so many claims, and I need to know how you know any of this.
To go into my personal testimony to show my insight.
How can you back up any of this? So at this we've got like a book says a thing, right? So you've got the Bible, you've got a book describes these creatures. Okay. Why would we think that they're
look at Enoch
real?
It doesn't matter.
The thing is, I don't care. What's the difference between the book of Enoch and Harry Potter? You can give me a definition of a Dementor, but I don't have any reason to think that one exists.
Robin,
I think it's real is because...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. The reason you think it's real is because...
The book of Enoch is, not in the Bible. But he describes things like the Watchers and things like that. And again, I don't claim to know that he has the exact concept correct. I don't think the Bible in and of itself is fully correct.
The reason you think it's true is because, Robin, I don't care about the Book of Enoch. The reason you think it's true is because what?
I don't think it's fully true, but I think that it's accountable because if we can see things in the real world that correlate to this, and there's multiple people that have experiences with this thing,
How do we know they have experiences with this thing? How do we know they have experiences with this thing? So far, we've got
we've got a book says a thing.
And so now the question is, why on earth would we think that the book correlates to real life in any way?
If we have people that currently have testimonies that are all relatively similar with each other and they're all stating the same thing, then I would think that there has some reliability.
So there are people who believe certain things. A number of people believe the same thing, so that makes it true.
There are people that don't even believe certain things that experience these things as well.
No, but they believe
what things?
Robin, you're saying they have these experiences. You're saying they have these experiences that are all similar. What we have to understand is that when we have an experience, we have to interpret that experience. What happened to me? What was that? I can have an experience. I can see something and feel something and hear something, but in my brain, I have to interpret what that is. And you're saying that simply because many people have interpreted experience the same way, that it must be true.
I'm not making a claim that this is 100% the truth. This is my theory that I go along with, and I'm not claiming anything about its 100% accuracy. I'm claiming from what I've witnessed and what I've heard other people.
So what have you witnessed? What have you witnessed? What have you witnessed demon?
Okay, so I guess I'll start off with I used to live in Alabama, and as you know, Alabama has a pretty dark history, especially with slavery. Mm-hmm. And in short, when I went there as an atheist, I went to this place, and you can Google it, called the Jemison Center. It's in Northport, Alabama. And it's a location that's abandoned now, and it is extremely creepy. But it has human remains still inside of the crematoriums and things like that. But essentially, it was a place where the black patients that were sent to the psychiatric center on campus, but is also abandoned, was an overflow station. They used to be in a barn, right? And now they put them over here instead because they said, well, we can put them to work. So it was basically slavery part two. And there's a lot of speculation stuff, but they assume that there was a lot of experimentation, things that went along there. And I'm not necessarily somebody that thinks that locations are what are the dark things and beings. I think that dark things and evil human behavior kind of open a window for those things to occur.
What did you experience, Robin? Robin, we got to get to it. What did you experience?
Oh, okay. Well, I experienced multiple things, I guess, a lot. I had experienced levitation. I experienced being held down on my bed. I experienced having, and this goes down a whole other rabbit trail, but there are smaller demons that kind of almost look like Dobby.
Okay, you're going to need to, okay, you got to stop making, you got to stop stacking claims. You got to stick with one and then demonstrate that the thing that you experienced was caused by
a demon. Pick one thing.
No, I'm sorry, but you told me to go into what I saw, and that we're limited on time, so I just kind of went
well,
into it.
You stacked a bunch of them on top of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, pick one thing, one experience.
Your best thing. Whichever one thing is the best evidence that you've got that any of this has anything to do with a demon.
I guess the correlation. So, I mean, like some people would claim that, I mean, I am on multiple mental health drugs. I'm not, you know, shy about that. And some people would claim that it's due to those things that you experience, hallucinations and things. But I never experienced these things from an atheist.
Robin, what is the experience that you had that is most obviously caused by a demon?
Most obviously. It's hard to pick one.
Okay.
I think that if I had to pick one.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, if I had to pick one, I would go with my experience of, I think, being dragged off of my bed.
Okay. Let me take that. We can all visualize what that looks like, okay? Yeah. Why in the hell would you say that that was a demon doing that? Because I'm going to go to the why here. Let's assume for a minute that what you're saying is true, that there are demons running around doing these kinds of things to people. And that they are, as you said, counter to the purposes of God, that they're wanting to fight God's will and fight God's plans, so to speak. Why? Why are they doing these things to you or to anyone else? What's the end game here? What's the purpose behind their devilry? Yes, they do.
Their purpose is to incite fear.
God incites fear. God incites fear. Read the Bible. God, everything in the Bible is about fear.
There's good fear and bad fear.
Oh, there is. No, there's not.
There's good and bad fear.
There's just fear.
Yes, there is. There's 100% good and bad fear.
Okay, well, we disagree on that.
But there's different types of fear.
So it's okay to fear God. It's okay for God to wipe out a whole race of people and to cause and to kill the firstborn of the Egyptians to incite fear in them. That's a good kind of fear?
Do you understand what the Egyptians were doing?
No, I know all those answers. That's still bullshit. Yeah, God murdered an innocent baby.
What were the infants
yeah,
doing?
What did the infants do that was so evil?
What were the infants doing? Give me a break. Robin, this is like I'm not trying to be rude. In fact, I want to show you respect here and tell you that this sounds like nonsense. So if you have this sensation of being pulled off of your bed, how do we demonstrate that was a demon?
I'm not claiming that you can scientifically.
Then why? Okay, wait. We got to drill down on this right now. So when is it time to believe a claim? When should you believe something?
When there's multiple congruent accounts.
No. You're okay. Get off the script. Get off the script. Hang on. Stop. Get off the script and answer this question directly. I'm asking you any claim. I'm not talking about these claims. I'm saying any claim. When is it time to believe something?
I've said it depends on what it is.
No, it doesn't. And this is not a trick question. Robin, this is not a trick question. When is it time to believe something?
Maybe I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, it's really simple. When there's evidence for it. Okay?
Robin, I think when you watch this back, no, you don't. You have an experience that you've interpreted as some kind of evidence. And I think when you watch this back, you might notice.
Isn't that what any evidence is?
No.
We interpret evidence. That's all we do.
So, well, Robin,
evidence doesn't tell us exactly what things are. Evidence is an interpretation of
things. No. Robin. No, you are very wrong here. So, Robin, evidence is anything that can be used to demonstrate that a claim is true. Evidence is the thing that makes sure that we're connected to reality with our beliefs.
Robin, I can go right now and see my dog on the couch. I don't have to try to believe. I don't have to try to interpret whether my dog is on the couch or not. I can go over there right now and pet her or sit down next to her. I don't have to try to determine, is she there? Is it a dog? What is it? What is it not? Is it a demon? I don't know. Is it a cat? No, it's a dog. It's clearly a dog. There are things that we can point to that are evidence that we don't have to interpret.
Right, but you're citing a very simplistic thing. I think I would go into different types of scientific studies. For example, the one I gave to Ethan earlier, the psychology and the mind and the difference between the spirit. There's many studies that are cited in that you have to interpret the results. Everything in science is interpreting the results, and you could have multiple scientists interpreting results differently.
I think you're looking at something. You're wanting to believe something that you think is true and there's no evidence for it. So you just
I don't want to believe that I experienced anything demonic. I would rather that not be the case, but.
Well, let's think about this for one second.
Let's go with that then. Cause that's probably what's true.
For one second. So you had a sensation of being pulled off of your bed. Okay. What evidence do you have? Sensation. I'm sorry.
It wasn't just like a vague sensation. It was.
I didn't say vague.
It happened in multiple.
I didn't say a vague sensation. I'm not in any way trying to discount your experience. I will completely validate that you had an experience of being dragged off of your bed. So how do we know what the cause of that was?
What would else? Give me another cause. It was in my bed by myself.
Okay. It was leprechauns.
It was a character from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Do you believe those characters are real? I don't know Harry Potter, but there are a bunch of characters in there. Do you believe they're real things? Do you believe the superheroes in the
themselves fights of their fantasy? No.
I'll tell you something. I'll give you a better example.
Aren't they real?
I'll give you a better example. For centuries, people knew where these types of experiences and sensations came from. They knew. They knew that when they had this experience of being dragged off their bed, or they had a night terror, or something bad happened to them, their crops died. They knew that it was witches in their neighborhood causing this.
And they burned them.
Thousands of women throughout history tied up and burned because everybody knew. Everybody had these experiences and everybody knew where they came from. It was witches.
The same kind of mentality, okay,
and again,
Robin.
The same thing with science. Forever people thought that bloodletting was the way to do things.
No. That's bullshit. That's not science. Okay. The scientific method, that is such a mischaracterization of science. So we don't have time to get into that.
Yeah,
let's
I think we've probably gone around the mountain enough times here.
How do you differentiate between demons dragging you off of your bed and a witch that lives on your block casting a spell? And when would it be time to believe either claim?
Because we actually have historical citations from multiple people describing multiple of the same thing.
So did they with the witches.
You do with witches too. That's why I use that example.
Oh my God. Read the accounts of the Salem witch trials. They all agreed. The whole village is agreed. What?
And again, you can look at those trials and have shit to none definition or evidence of what the witches were doing.
You are so dodging.
There is exactly as much evidence for the witches as there is for the demons, which is
okay.
Big old goose egg, Robin.
Thanks. I think we'd beat this to death.
I will state that you guys aren't quite as cordial as the host last week. I will state that, but I did really appreciate the discussion. I did have a good time.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I just the thing is, look,
Robin, it's not about us not being cordial.
Quite a bit
no, we didn't. We didn't. What we did, Robin, was not allow you to completely continue to make assertions and claims without evidence. That's all we did was call you back to give evidence for the
really
assertions you were making.
Any of my evidence at all, other than one isolated incident.
We don't have, you have so many, we just don't have all night.
I asked you a bunch of times for the evidence, but listen, Robin, we're going to move on to other callers. Yeah. Have a great night. But yeah, I mean, everything in that call goes back to, you know, there's tons of nonsense and bullshit out there competing for your attention. And there are tons of religions and wooey wacky claims that will try to offer you explanations for phenomena that you experience. But the time to believe is when you have evidence, period. When you jump to it's a demon or it's a witch or it's whatever, you're making a mistake. There's a failure to, you know, of like epistemic responsibility there. Let's move on. Woo, let's wrap. We got a bunch of callers now. So let's move on.
That took a long time.
John in looks like Connecticut, possibly. John, what can we help you with?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, John.
Hey, I'm an idealist. I believe I am God dreaming because I don't believe brains produce consciousness.
Cool.
Okay.
Why?
Because materialism says that consciousness is a byproduct of certain brain activity incidentally. And I don't believe that consciousness is an incidental byproduct. Actually, why would there be consciousness in materialism in the first place?
So consciousness is often described as being this emergent property, right? That it's a thing that happens in the brain. We don't fully understand how exactly our brain produces consciousness. But we don't have reasons to believe that it comes from anywhere else. All the evidence seems to point to the brain. Do you have evidence that consciousness comes from somewhere else?
I only have evidence, or I can only prove consciousness to myself. But if the materialism's claim is that consciousness is a byproduct of brain activity, that would need a physical explanation for it, which I have searched. I cannot find it. It's the natural thing to do. If materialism is wrong, the idealism is the better philosophy because it actually accounts for consciousness as something fundamental.
I mean, idealism? I can account for consciousness by saying that there's a giant invisible turtle that is telepathically communicating with all of us, and that's consciousness. I can pull some stuff out of my ass too, but the question is, what does the evidence point to?
Well, where's the evidence for materialism?
I can look and see.
The evidence.
What is idealism? Define idealism. You keep using that term. What is that to you?
Idealism says that the brains do not produce consciousness. That consciousness is a fundamental thing.
Great. So what's the evidence for that?
Yeah, to prove that.
So we got two models, right? Idealism and materialism.
Okay.
We could use the process of elimination to decide which is a better worldview.
You can tear down materialism. People do this with evolution all the time. Christians will call and say, well, evolution's false, therefore God. But disproving evolution doesn't get you any closer to a God. You could say
it's called the process of elimination.
You could say that it's not, because how would you know that there aren't other explanations on the table that you aren't considering? You've reduced it to a dichotomy, and you're saying one of those things you don't buy, therefore your shit is true. That's not how logic works, man.
Yes, it does.
No, it isn't.
You don't just pick two things out of nowhere and say one's not true and one is.
So we have two options. There could be three, there could be four, there could be five, but there's only two known options. If we eliminate one, we can conclude the other.
There's not only, okay, if
That's
I say,
logic.
Okay, so I've got my phone right here. If I say this phone was either made by a guy named Steve or a guy named Ron, I don't believe that it was made by a guy named Steve. Therefore, a guy named Ron made my phone. Am I onto something?
I'm not really impressed with your analogy.
I don't give a shit if you're impressed with my analogy.
I'm not very impressed with your argument.
I am equally as impressed with yours, because I'm doing the same thing. So if you're not impressed with mine, then look in the mirror.
So if you flip a coin, right, it either lands on heads or tails. If somebody says it's not tails, is it okay to assume that it landed on heads?
You haven't demonstrated that this is a coin situation. Haven't demonstrated that A and B are our only
options. You're making a ton of assumptions.
You have not demonstrated anything.
So what's the source of consciousness? Is consciousness its own source, or is the brain the source of consciousness?
I already said that you know, the scientific community does not have an answer to consciousness yet. We know that the brain does things that appear to give rise to what we describe as consciousness. We don't have examples. We don't have examples of consciousness that exists outside of brains. So all evidence.
Well, we can only verify our own consciousness. How do you falsify idealism?
I'm not the one making the claim.
I don't need to falsify it.
I don't need to falsify materialism.
I can touch things.
There's no consciousness in materialism. How does a physical system produce consciousness as a byproduct?
We've already said, I'm going to say it the third time now. So scientists have not solved consciousness, but all of the evidence.
So they haven't proven their claim.
Consciousness.
So they haven't proven their claim.
The brain. Okay. We are no.
Do you really
closer
think that consciousness is a byproduct?
Do I think? I think that seems most likely for sure, because I don't have any reason to think that consciousness comes from anywhere other than the brain.
That's you. Okay, by saying that, I got to tell you, I'm not saying that consciousness exists anywhere except for one's own consciousness could be verified. I don't know if you have consciousness. I don't know if anybody has consciousness. I don't even know about mine. Now, if you do have consciousness, that's great, but that doesn't mean that it's a byproduct of brain activity. Why must consciousness exist in materialism? Must being the key word. Why must consciousness exist?
Define consciousness.
Consciousness is a being that is capable of perceiving. So any consciousness that can see a red apple is a being, and it can perceive it. So I don't believe brains could see an apple. You need consciousness to see an apple.
You don't believe brains
which is,
can see
and
an
you,
apple.
Do your eyes, how do you see an apple?
With consciousness.
No. How do you see the apple? Through what portal?
Light goes into the eyes and is interpreted by the brain.
Thank you.
There you
brains
go.
See the apple. You just argued
how?
Against
how yourself.
How
does a brain see an apple?
Through the
I'm
eyes.
I'm not a neurologist. I have no idea.
Through the eyes.
They don't know either. I'll give you a hint. They don't know either.
You,
so why are you still materialist, even though I've proven to you that there is no consciousness
in
materialism?
You haven't proven anything. So
I don't know about you, man.
You can learn all about the evolution of the eye. You can learn about the brain. You can look at how we can alter brain states. We can alter consciousness by doing stuff to the brain. So when we alter the physical systems, that experience of what it's like to be me or what it's like for you to be you changes. So how do you explain that on idealism?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, so that's kind of an analogy for that. Is a car a person?
I asked you a question.
If a person is driving...
I asked you a question.
I'm answering it.
Okay, go ahead and answer that question.
Okay, you said, how does physically manipulating the brain affect consciousness? I say it doesn't affect consciousness. It affects the experience of consciousness. You were saying that if you break a vehicle that somebody is driving, it's going to affect the way they drive.
What is the distinction?
The driver is not the vehicle.
What is the distinction
the brain
between
is not
consciousness and the experience of consciousness? What's the distinction between consciousness and the experience of consciousness?
Consciousness is immutable. It is what it is. Consciousness is what consciousness does. It has different experiences, almost infinite experiences it can have. It could be sick, it could be happy, it could be sad.
Consciousness is experiences, right?
Consciousness is an experiencer. It's not experiences.
Could I, John, ask maybe a stupid question? What's the point of this conversation? What does it matter? Why are you arguing so vociferously against materialism? What is it you're trying to gain here? What's the point of this conversation?
I want to know if I am God dreaming.
Well, okay. I guess you are. If you want to be God, be God.
Honestly,
seriously,
is this
your question? Are you a fucking troll? What the hell is that? I want to know if I'm God. What does that even mean?
Why not?
I'm done with this conversation. You guys can talk all you want.
Have fun with that, John. All right.
I'm not interested in conversations that go in circles that have no point in the rational world we live in. What the fuck are we doing? I'm sorry. I'm too old for this shit. Life's too short.
If we're
going to have a conversation about something that really matters that could make a difference in the world we live in, the demon conversation is important because those are experiences and we need to know how to interpret our experiences and interpret the world around us. But this consciousness, materialism, idealism, what this guy's, he's just spinning his head in circles and I got no use for that. Sorry.
Yeah. There's a type of like pseudo philosophy. I mean, I dealt with this in college, you know, when you're dealing with somebody who's, you know, just took a huge bong rip and they're like, you know, what if we're all like,
what if we're not really what here, if... man?
And it's like, all right, cool.
Okay.
Like, well, in the meantime, all of us in reality have shit to do.
I mean, that's what he had when we said, what's the point of this? He wants to know if he's God. That's what he's here. That's the point of this conversation. Seriously.
Well, Anyway, we got another person. We got Todd. Yeah.
Hey, Todd.
We're back on demons.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Todd, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going? I've been listening to your show, and wow, you guys I'd be an alcoholic. I was contacted because I posted on a paranormal Facebook page about an experience. In generalizing, I used a demonic attack.
Okay.
My problem with that is the demons, they have too many religious connotations, so often it's immediately discredited. So I'm not looking at it from a perspective of religion, and I think it's kind of interesting that most people that get possessed are Catholic. You know, I mean, so I really don't think that's the right way to look at it. But as far as consciousness goes, all of that can be actually understood by picking up a few books by David R. Hawkins. He is the most prolific writer on the subject of consciousness. But with that said, there's many different levels of consciousness. So I actually have had a long, pretty extensive experience with the lower and the upper. But
lower and upper what? I'm sorry. I just want to get clear definitions. Lower and upper what?
I'll elaborate.
Yeah.
There are different levels of consciousness from 0 all the way to 1,000. They're logarithmic in nature. And how they're measured. The numbers themselves are actually arbitrary. They're just used in comparison with, you know, each other. So each of the levels are affiliated with a certain emotion. So David R. Hawkins actually created what's called the map of consciousness. And I'm not going to go through with the details. That would be too extensive. But It's been tried and true. He uses applied kinesiology, scientific method. So consciousness essentially is the totality of the soul's faculties. That's pretty much it. I mean, it's not really that comprehensive. It's not soul, that complicated.
I'm sorry. Let me stop you again a minute because I'm just trying to get clarity on what you're saying. You're saying it's the totality okay. of the soul's consciousness or the soul's, what'd you say?
No. No, I said consciousness is the totality of the soul's faculties.
The soul's faculties. So is that what you said? Souls, like
that is
body, soul, faculty, and spirit?
The ability to perceive, not limited through the five senses. Okay. And there's been many tests done in science.
How do we know we have a soul? Let's start there.
Well, we don't have a soul.
Okay.
We have a body.
I'm confused as hell. I thought you said.
Well, there's nothing to be confused about.
It's the totality of the. You used the word soul. The totality of the soul's.
Yeah, totality of the soul's faculty as what each and every individual is essentially. That's using a body. So there's two ways to approach.
Kenneth, can you help me? Kenneth, can you help me? Because he said totality of the soul's conscious of the soul's faculties, but he said there's no soul.
Yeah,
I'm very confused.
Yeah, Todd, we're a bit all over the place, man. So. I'll tell you that.
What are you confused about?
Do we have a soul or not?
No, that would be redundant. We have a body.
Oh my God. You said.
You can approach life. Okay, let me simplify it. Okay,
please,
I'll put it in layman's terms.
Yeah,
so there's two ways to approach life. You can approach life in existence as being a human being with a soul. Or you could approach life acknowledging yourself as a soul with a body.
I got to butt in because on the call screening thing, it said that you were calling about a demonic attack that you've been attacked.
I go off on tangents. AD.
Yeah, you think?
So what I wanted, though, was that oftentimes 99% of the times such experiences can be explained medically. People have misperceptions. They don't have a comprehensive understanding of all the natural phenomena that can happen, so they automatically label it demonic, as if they're special, being targeted. You know, and people that have little control in their ordinary lives, people that are prone to belief rather than understanding.
Are you going to give us a way to distinguish between legit demonic attacks and the ones that are just imaginary?
Okay, so what I was talking about, like with consciousness, and everybody has a different range of perception, which that's a valid, scientifically backed fact. Some people do have ESP. Some people can't see.
You're not going to get away with saying ESP is a scientific fact because it's not.
Yeah. Did you ever hear Project Bluebeam? You ever listen to the George Norrie show? Remote viewing. Yes. It is actually applied in government.
No, it is not.
It's the same thing.
Oh,
yes,
Todd.
It is.
No, it
remote
is not.
Viewing is in the remote viewing is in a range of ESP. But my point is, everybody
remote
has
viewing
a
is
range
bullshit.
Of
Todd, remote viewing is bullshit. Like, let's be serious.
No, you can believe that, but there's facts. If you look it up, remote viewing has been used since the 1940s with great success.
No, it is not.
All you got to do is look it up. The information's there. You can ignore the information.
Oh, it's on
the internet. Hey,
Kenneth, it's on the internet. It's on the internet, Kenneth.
So that's fine. You don't have to believe in remote viewing, okay? That's fine.
Well, remote viewing,
I don't believe in anything.
Let's talk about this one thing. So remote viewing. What evidence is there that remote viewing is a legitimate phenomenon?
Oh my God. You know what? It's too extensive. Anybody listening, look it up. The government has been using this as a means to validate other data. It's used in,
no, they don't.
You know, along with, it's not the sole means, but it's used.
There's
a book by Lynn Buchanan. You know who Lynn Buchanan is?
Yeah, I know who Lynn Buchanan is. I know about Project Stargate and all that bullshit. Like, yeah, I know about it. The government spent millions of dollars testing this stuff and determined that it was nonsense.
My point is, it went wasted money over 20, 30 years.
The reason why the Project Stargate stuff was declassified, why all those records are made available to the public, is because there was nothing there.
Bullshit.
Remote viewing was a colossal waste of time and money on the intelligence agencies and the Air Force and everybody that was involved in that. everybody who's honest about it will tell you it. There was nothing there. So, okay, you're unmuted.
You want to look for information, but the point is, though, is that
he never
every
stopped talking.
Individual has different range. So every
no,
every
you don't,
person,
you, you
every
don't
individual
get to
has
say
a,
that. You don't
oh
get to say
God
that everybody has this range without demonstrating that that's
no,
true.
I stated remote viewing as a factual practice, and each and every person is free to look that up themselves.
But it's bullshit,
example to elaborate on why I'm calling that each and every person has a certain range of perspective. They have a range of that they can see. Proofs are all constructs.
Prove it.
Yeah, I can prove it. Okay, I can prove it. Have you ever looked at a painting by Renoir?
Renoir?
Or by Monet.
Yes.
Or any famous painter, any famous musician, any well-known person who was actually able to have that vision, was able to perceive and bring it into the physical manifest.
What
absolutely
are you talking
yes
about?
Some people have an imagination.
Listen,
some don't.
So I went to grad school in New York. I used to have a membership at the Met. I've spent hours upon hours looking at masterful works of art. You know,
right,
incredible
and you have
place
a different response
so
than another person. Each and every person has a, it's subjective. That's the problem. You can't prove that which is subjective. It's impossible.
What
so
are you talking about?
Really, proof. But here's the thing with proof: it's not reflective of
Todd,
truth.
What are you talking
proof
about? What
is
any of
fact
this?
What he's
any
saying
of this have
I
to
think
do with remote
what
viewing and ESP
what
and all that?
What he's saying okay is that you can't prove anything. That everyone has their own perspective of things, and so there is no real truth. You can't verify anything that we
no,
all
no,
get.
I'm not saying that at all. Truth can be verified.
It's kind of what you just
proof
said.
And truth are not proof and truth are not actually interchangeable. That's what I'm saying. So you can have proof of something which is based on facts, which are
but it's not the truth about that thing.
Okay,
but
maybe
that,
maybe
but,
we need to define truth.
But
what is? Can you do me a favor?
Facts alone, which is content, that's not context.
Do you ever stop talking? Mute him. Mute him. Mute him. Mute him.
All of these catchphrases and stuff.
Oh my God! It's a word vomit. It's word salad. He's just using words, and I'm still going back to the soul thing. Did I miss something? He said there's not a soul, and then he said that something was the totality of the souls. Todd, slow down.
Yeah.
And tell us what the hell you're talking about, buddy. The volume of words does not equal something. Oh, he never stopped talking.
Todd, listen.
He never stopped talking.
You've got to listen, okay?
We've
got to drill
talking
down on some definitions. We got to figure out truth and how we can know what's true, because you're just going and going and going. So we got to slow it down. I'm going to unmute you here. But you've got to slow it down.
For truth. And,
okay, I'm going to give you another chance here, Todd. I'm telling you. Okay, you've got to take a deep breath and listen. For us to have a conversation, you've got to slow down. So I'm going to give you one more chance. I'm going to unmute you in a moment. If you're still going, we're going to drop the call, all right? So 3, 2, 1, unmuted.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Okay, so let's
yeah.
Okay. What does it mean for something to be true?
There's truth and falsehood. That which is true, which is both objective and subjective, is that which is the objective truth is that which supports life, essentially.
Okay.
That which is not true.
You've got to
no,
stop. You've got to stop.
Truth.
Todd.
There's, no, there's nothing. You
Todd,
can't take
is,
anything out of his
this
words.
This is rough, man, because yeah. you just used a lot of words and didn't say anything. I'm gonna propose a definition to you. No, I'm comprehending what
I'm
you're putting
you
down,
an answer.
But it makes no sense. So I'm gonna throw something out there.
No,
for
why
you
does it make
for
sense?
For something to be true, okay. When Dave okay or I say that something is true, we're just saying that it's consistent with reality.
That's where you kind of go into the gray area, because what's reality?
Okay.
Reality is a subjective experience.
No, it's not. Reality by definition. Reality definitionally is that which exists. Todd, just listen for one second.
Okay,
can
I give you an example
confused
that can be actually
no
tested?
You can listen for a second. So reality, definitionally, reality is what exists independently of whether or not you or I or Dave believes it.
Okay, great. great.
It kind of is.
No,
great.
I mean that's a definition that
Todd,
I agree with. Todd,
100%. Would you say you can't see it, but I have my car, the car that I own, the car that I drive is a white Hyundai Sonata. It's an actual vehicle. It's a vehicle that I drive. It's made by a company called Hyundai, which is a Korean car manufacturer. It's white in color.
Right.
Would you say that this is true?
And what you said about truth is...
Todd, would you say, if I sent you a picture of it, if I walked you up next to it and you could touch it and feel it, would you agree that it's true that I have a white Hyundai Sonata sitting in my driveway?
Well, I guess if I'm blind, I really wouldn't know.
Oh my God!
I wouldn't change the fact. All right,
Todd, you're just playing. You're playing word games. I'm tired of you.
This is so dishonest.
You're playing word games. You're not being honest. You're not being honest. If you could see, okay, can you see? Can you see? Can you see? Do you have sight?
Yes.
Can you see?
Yes.
If I walked you up to my car and showed you, Todd. Todd, stop talking. If I walked you up to my car and you touched it and looked at it and you saw that it was a white Hyundai Sonata, you agreed with my perception of that. Would you say it's true that I have a white Hyundai Sonata in my driveway? Yes or no?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yep. That is what's true. There are things that you can determine are true based upon reality in the world in which we live. That's a simple answer.
I have a question though. What about people who are supposedly colorblind?
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about what the car is.
You are the pinnacle of truth.
This is a great example. Nobody has said anything about being the pinnacle of truth. Okay. So we can stop lying about what you said.
Because you're telling me right now.
What we're using here for definitions of truth and reality, these are common definitions that are useful. Okay.
Those are facts. You have a white Honda or Hyundai, right?
I'm going to mute you because you're incapable of having a conversation. So a colorblind person is a great example. So we can have a white car sitting in Dave's driveway. We can verify the make and model. We can look at it. We can be sure that it's real and all this. And then we've got someone whose perception is different.
But it doesn't change the reality of what is.
Exactly that.
Thank you.
So this is a great example. So, and then we have ways, there are ways to verify whether the car is white. That colorblind person can apply reliable methodologies and figure out what color the car is.
And if the colorblind person is honest, they will acknowledge that I can't perceive of what might be true because I have an issue with colorblindness. It's not complicated, Todd. You're making it complicated.
That the criteria for truth is...
He never stopped talking.
What is it, math?
All right.
I think we got to go. He never stopped talking.
Todd,
he can't listen.
When you learn how to have a conversation, call us back and we'll try again. But that's rough.
So, man.
Yeah.
That's just, I don't know how you talk to people like that. Honestly, I want to have an honest conversation with him. I want to hear what his perspective is and what his opinion is, but he's not even an he doesn't have an honest conversation. He keeps dodging honest questions, and you can't communicate with someone like that.
But this is you're pointing to it. And for the viewers watching, like pay attention to this. When you watch these shows, you'll see people playing by two different sets of rules. You know, Dave and I, we're trying to communicate clearly. We're trying to, you know, break things down to their simplest terms. We're trying to drill down to what can we know? And we're trying to encourage people to be as honest and direct as possible. And then you've got the other side.
Yeah. And Lisa Wickersham. Hi, Lisa. I started drinking before I came on this show because I know what these calls do to me.
Yeah.
I can't. Oh, my God.
We've got another. Another caller on the line. I'm still waiting for, we got a few people in the chat who I'm seeing. There was a guy, Chad, who I you know, I'm still waiting for Chad to call.
Call in. Don't hide in the chat. You know, my name is over there making arguments.
Yeah,
my name.
Yeah. I mean,
my name, call in. We would love to call, you know, don't hide in the chat. If you got something, bring it. Bring it on. Let's go. We'll talk to you.
We can talk to you.
You're hiding in the chat, and that's the cowardly way to do it. I'm just going to call you out.
It is. I mean, it is. In the meantime, we've got Sanito in Washington. Let me know if I mispronounced that. Is it Sanito?
Yes, it's Sanito.
What's going Sanito. On? How are you?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. Also, real quick, right off the bat, I'm sorry about the accent. I'm working on it. And I really want to talk to you, Dave. So this is a huge thing for me.
Man, I gotta say something to you. I gotta say something off that. So in my day job, I work with immigrants. I work with people from all over the world. And I routinely run into people who are telling me they're trying to lose their accents. And it makes me sad every time they say that.
No, man. Your accent's great. Don't apologize for it.
Be you. I mean, an accent tells a story. An accent comes with a heritage and a history and a culture, man. So
I got that Southern accent going. I'm not going to lose that thing ever.
Yeah, I've got that accent of being like, maybe this guy didn't do so good in school, you know, that kind of accent. So, you know, we've all got our accents.
Go ahead, Sanito. Good to talk with you.
Okay. Also, I really want to say hi to Kenneth because I like both of you guys. That's why I wanted to call today.
Thank you.
So I have a question for you guys. Let's say that you, well, this happened to me. Let's say you had an experience that you think could be paranormal, but I don't want to label it like that because I can't prove the paranormal. Hmm. How would you deal with it if you had an experience, you couldn't explain it, and you thought it was pretty significant?
Bro, you're asking the best question. So yeah, you're doing this the right way. Okay?
Exactly.
So you'll hear people respond to a question like this, first and foremost, by laying out a foundation that sometimes I don't know is the most honest thing that you can possibly say. Sometimes I don't know is the answer that you have. And I don't know can always be revised. I don't know is subject to new experiences and new evidence and new information. I don't know is a good place to be, but I don't know is a place that a lot of people are very, very uncomfortable with being. Mm-hmm. Okay. We feel like we've got to be able to explain
shit. I'm not uncomfortable with it at all.
I'm getting that vibe from you, and I very much appreciate that.
Yeah, the problem with the trouble we get into is when we start making up answers to fill in the blank of I don't know.
Word.
And oftentimes we come from we provide the answers that our experience brings us that we come from. So if I was in a charismatic evangelical culture, which I was for many years, and I believed in, as some of the callers that we've had tonight believed in, angels and demons, that I believe there were spiritual entities moving around me and that they had power, then if I had an unexplained experience, I would bring that perspective into the experience and try to label it with one of those with some kind of an understanding. Yeah. Whereas if I'm coming from a neutral standpoint, then I don't have to explain the experience. I can just point to it and say, well, let me look at the best possible best possible answers for this. Let me go down through a list of things that it might be and come up with the best possible explanation. And if I still can't get there to an answer, I just simply shrug my shoulders and I say, I don't know. And in reality, it probably doesn't matter a whole lot.
I had an experience like this on Sunday. All right. So I was down in Kansas City with my family, and I saw a thing in the sky, and from the angle I was looking at it, it looked like, I'm dead serious, like a flying saucer. All right. It had like a little nub thing in the middle and it was all wide and flat. I was like, that, what the hell is that shit? So here's the thing. From the angle that I was looking at it, it looked like a flying saucer. And if it would have stayed on that angle and kept going straight, it would have stayed looking like a flying saucer from my perspective. Hey, that's the name of the show. But the thing is, it banked. And when it started to turn, I could see what it was. It was a B-2 bomber. All right. which those are freaky looking aircraft anyway, but they're so flat and like skinny and wide, like mm-hmm. they look weird depending on the angle you're looking at it from. And I've seen B-2 bombers before. I've seen B-2 bombers from that angle where they look like flying saucers before, but my brain wasn't giving me that, right? So it's just like, what the hell is that? So if I am left with what the hell is that, if that plane never turns, if nothing happens and I'm just looking at it, you know, from that angle, then I'm left with going, I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
A lot of people will jump to, I saw an alien. and that's the problem, is we want to fill in those gaps, you know?
And, so, and in terms of things we feel, experience, there's been some studies done. In fact, a friend of mine at the Recovering from Religion retreat that we had a few months ago, a friend of mine, Alice Gretchen, who's a former evangelical young lady and deconstructed a few years ago, but she's done some studies, and there have been other people who have, but I know her personally, on brain activity during spiritual events like speaking in tongues and intense worship experiences and being slain in the spirit. And people have wondered what happened? What was that? You know, was it real? Was it not? What was I experiencing? And there are legitimate studies that have been made that show activity in the brain going on and chemicals being released in our brain in certain situations that cause us to think we're experiencing something that we're not. Same thing that happens with near-death experiences where people get close to death and they have these white lights and they think they've gone to heaven and all these things are going on. The brain activity is popping. And it's nothing supernatural. It's nothing spiritual. It's nothing unexplained. It's just what we're learning about the brain as we continue to improve in science.
Yeah.
No, speaking of that. It may be related to what Dave said, but I used to be in mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. There was an occasion when I was choked out to the point of to the point where I almost passed out for a second.
Yeah.
And I remember that I saw some weird stuff.
Yeah.
Around the moment that I lost.
That's what's going on. That's what's going on.
There's thing where it's like it's closing. I've been choked out many times, man. I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in 2001. I've been in the game a long time. I've been choked out more times than I can count. And yeah, it's. Yeah,
I feel left out. I've never been choked out. I feel left out here. I'm sorry. I feel like, you know, the redhead stepchild.
Hey, speaking of Alice, for those watching.
If you want to, I can choke you out.
No, you know what? I'll pass on that. It doesn't sound that fun, actually.
I just wanted to quickly say, speaking of Alice, Alice is going to be on The Perspective next month. Alice was on Ask an Atheist recently with Ethan.
Right.
It was a great episode. Yeah. I was not familiar with Alice. I'm really glad that I am now. So yeah, check that out. Viewers.
She's done some studies because she had when she was her story, if you haven't read it, Wayward is her book. Everyone should get that and read it. It's an awesome memoir, but she was really puzzled by what was going on around her being, because she it was in meetings with people being slain in the spirit, speaking in tongues. And as we get out of that, we wonder, was that real? What was I experiencing when I did that? And as we learn, it's just brain activity, man. It's just neurons, things popping in the brain and chemicals going off in the brain, dopamines, and I don't know the names of them, but it's legitimately that have been studied.
I understand that.
Yeah, so that's a lot of what we experience.
It's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience, well, it was weird, but I actually have a person with that was my friend that actually witnessed it with me. And I was around 16 at the time. Now, this I could just chalk it up to a weird dream if it had happened to me alone or if it had just happened to my friend and me. But I actively remember that day we were so panicked. My parents actually found those bear kid in my room with my younger nephew. We were all alone.
Was the experience?
Yeah, what'd you see?
What was it?
Okay. Please don't judge. I know it sounds
We're not.
No.
Basically, we were babysitting my younger nephew. He was about 5 at the time. My friend was 16 or 17. I was 15. And, well, we were in the living room hanging out. I went to my room down the hall to get something, and I heard my friend scream in terror, which he normally didn't do. I saw something had happened to my nephew. So I rush out of the room at full speed, and I see this. I saw a kid that was like a living shadow. Just like imagine a kid, but completely black running towards me. I moved out of the way and I ran to the living room. My friend was there. He was holding my nephew. He said, "Did you see that? Please tell me you saw that." So we grabbed my nephew. We checked their apartment to see if someone had gotten in. That was our first thing. Maybe a kid snuck into the house, and we panicked. We checked the house. Everything was closed. Nothing was there. We got freaked out, and we barricaded ourselves in my room. About 3 hours later, my parents came home and found two panicked teenagers and a toddler in the room. It sounds weird.
What do you
explain it? So I just chalked it up.
What did you take away? What did you think it was? Or what do you think it is now? I mean, or you just say, I don't know and may never know.
Well, at the time I was raised Catholic and I was still raised in that area. So I thought, oh no, demon or something like that. Which mm-hmm. obviously I'm not a Catholic anymore. Mm. And you know, the thing didn't really do anything to me. So maybe it's a little racist to call it a demon.
Mm-hmm.
So I just honestly now I literally have no idea. I don't want to say it was a ghost, it was an apparition, because I don't know. I don't even know if it's paranormal or not, because I could see it, which means that something had to have been there, interacted with my eyes, therefore it had to be natural in a way.
To further complicate things, so at this point you're also dealing with memory now. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I know that memory is not very reliable. So the more I tell the story, the more that I may change it without realizing.
Yeah, I've experienced that. I recently I recently finished writing my memoir, and it's going to be out first of the year for you guys that want one. But as I'm delving back through my life, as I wrote this in the last year and a half, I found myself trying to recall, did I really experience that? Or was this a memory that was put there by some conversation that I had? Or was it something that I think I remember or that I heard? And I found myself getting a bit confused. I'm really talking about my early life, but as a child, I think that there are things that we can, that can become fixed in our minds that happened that got built up somehow from conversations or thoughts or dreams, or not to say that it didn't happen. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that our minds can play a lot of tricks on us when it comes to memories and experiences and perceptions and those kind of things. And I found that to be true as I'm digging through the rubble of my life and looking at especially like those early years, what happened, what didn't, was that real? Was that true? Am I remembering this correctly? Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think we have, like Kenneth said, we have to factor all that in, especially if it's a few years ago and, you know, we've lived a lot of life since then.
I mean, the whole point of skepticism is, you know, you're not being cynical, you're not just saying I don't want to believe anything or denying other people's experiences or whatever. The whole point with skepticism is you're just proportioning your belief to the evidence. And when you have an experience and you don't know what caused it and you don't know what you saw and you don't know how to even begin to assess the claim and it's years ago, you're in the position of if you're responsible, if you're honest, of having to go, I don't know what the fuck that was. It was weird. I had a weird experience. I was creeped out. It scared the shit out of me and my friend, but we don't know what the hell we saw. And that's it.
But I think that's what you're doing. That's
how I've handled it.
Yeah. And I think that's a very healthy.
Did you guys take on it?
Yeah. No, I think you've got the best perspective to tag the show again.
That's the name of the show.
In that you're just looking at it going, you know what? I have this experience. I have this memory of this experience. I don't know what the hell it was. It didn't hurt me, you know, no worse for wear. Who knows? I may never know. Also, you may hear something down the road and someone will explain something that happened to them that was similar and they'll have an explanation for it.
Yeah.
And you'll go, oh my God, that's exactly what happened to me. That makes sense.
That'll be some story.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Hey, you guys hear about there was that skinny guy dressed up like a shadow breaking into people's houses? Like, oh shit, that was the guy. You know, like
I lived in that neighborhood. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think
that happens, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Yeah. No.
But no. Until then, you're doing it the right way, man.
Yeah, that's a good perspective, man.
Perfect. Also, just want to say thank you. And I really wanted to call in because I wanted to talk to Dave. I knew I wanted to talk to Dave at one point. I saw that you guys were open, and I decided to call in.
Hey, thanks mission for accomplished, man.
It was a great chat, and I hope you don't have to drink a lot because of me.
No, you're easy, man. Thanks for calling. I appreciate your support. I appreciate that.
It's good talking to you, man. All right. And clear. Well, at this point, you know.
Sweet.
There are no more irrational claims to deal with. We handled it all. There's no more callers.
Did we go overtime? Do you target an hour and a half or an hour?
So we go anywhere from an hour to an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
It's right. Based on callers. So we have like a 30-minute freedom.
That's it.
Of, you know.
And we are
not too long, not too short.
There were no more calls.
Just right.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
And for those who don't know, we also do a Discord after show. So after this show, hop into the YFNA Discord, and you can chat with us about the show. So what'd you guys think?
You know what? Pretty much. Oh, there's a nice super chat coming in. You want to call that out?
We got the super chat from Amit. Can you put that on the... There we go. Oh, thank you for the accent comment. I'm dead serious about it.
No, too. That's a legit point. I'm glad you said that, actually.
It breaks my heart, man.
I was sad that he was apologizing for his accent, which really wasn't that strong, in my opinion.
Yeah. I meet a lot of people, too, who they'll have, like, some really cool name, and it'll be like, oh, you know, how do you pronounce that? And they'll go, oh, just call me, you know, Steve.
Yeah.
And it's like, ah, come on. You got a cool name. Make the Americans say it, you know. Make them learn. Don't just go by Steve. So... Yeah. Anyway,
no, it's a good show. Good show. Good calls. Some feisty ones, and some of them that just made my head spin like The Exorcist. But you know, that's what this show is, man.
And there was definitely some feisty ones.
I truly hate the calls that go in circles and where we're having to drill down on like basic communication, basic critical thinking, but we have to, or otherwise it's just. You know, it's like, blowing up a balloon and letting it go.
Yeah,
just,
I forget that guy's name, but that one that was just like, he just wouldn't even answer a question, honestly, if I had a white car.
He was definitely frustrating you.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
so, I mean, for people who watch this and go, oh, these guys are just being mean, they won't let him get a word out.
No.
Like, we want to have the conversations with people, but there are certain things that can make a conversation truly impossible. If someone's not listening and responding to questions, if someone won't answer a question, if somebody's just making claim after claim after claim after claim and not substantiating any of it, we can't make any headway with those people.
We're not going to sit there and let them just spout off the stuff and not challenge it. That's just not what we're here for.
You can't. You have to challenge the claims that we get.
They can go on Breitbart and do that or whatever it is.
Gross.
I'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Cindy Plaza, Left, Right, Left, Kenneth Leonard,
hey.
Sky, Jump and Shoot, Oz, Secular Rarity, Philip Leach, Caitlin Beyond, Toast, Richard Gilliver, Sunset Sarge, Amit Matthew, Ray Sylvester, and Kyle Brewer. Thank you so much for your patronage. Dave, what do you have going on?
Gosh, I've got kind of a clear slate coming up in the near future. I, of course, my show every Monday night, that GD show. We're looking forward to some good guests coming up through the end of the year. Haven't booked anything out first of the year yet. And then I'm getting my book printed soon, man. It's editing's done, and I'm getting good reviews on it. I'm getting some good blurbs from some people you guys are going to recognize. So I'm happy about that. So yeah, I'm pumped about that. I'm kind of focused on that through that.
Can't wait. I'm going to be first in line for the book.
It came out well. I'm very pleased with it. You know, a memoir is a tricky thing because you're walking naked through a mall, man.
We've all done that.
Yeah. Well, no, Kenneth, we haven't. That's the problem. You keep getting arrested for that, Kenneth, and we're telling you to stop it. Now, get some help. Seriously, get some help. No, you're really exposing yourself, and it. But I felt like it came out great. I'm really pleased with it. Good. If you guys will like it.
Well, I look forward to it. Kenneth, what about you?
It's ongoing. I've got my duties as the president of the Secular Rarity fan club. That's the thing that I've been trying to get around now. And I don't have the eyebrow capabilities that guy has, but you know, I'm on Talk Heathen doing that. So this Sunday I'll be on Talk Heathen with Johnny P. We're doing the big Halloween thing this weekend.
Oh yeah. 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 Meet
Johnny P. You're so lucky.
That's right. We did karaoke. I heard Johnny P singing Tom Jones and it was awesome.
It's not unusual.
That's exactly what he did. It was awesome.
Speaking of meeting, we're going to see you guys in November at FF. I don't know if you're.
Hey, the Forum, baby.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
Please.
Please,
not in the middle. The YMNA OGs there. You've got to be
I'm stoked about seeing a bunch of people there. And you know who I'm stoked about meeting? I hope it still comes through is Kristen. I don't know if she's still on, but
that's the main event.
I'm serious. I told her, I said, you're the reason I'm coming to Faithless Forum to meet you, girl. No, you're that's not. Right. Yes, that's I right. am.
Can we get Kristen on the screen? Turn on that webcam.
Oh, I wish. One day.
I just love her. I just think I'm just such a fan of hers and all that she does in our community.
That's the thing. There are people like Kristen who, I mean, like people who watch, people who pay attention to the content creators, like they see the talking head people like us. But for every one, you know, Dave or me or Ethan, there are people who are like the backbones of this.
It community. Doesn't happen without them. It does not seriously. Happen.
Seriously.
I get ready for my show last night. I'm looking at all the people that are getting queued up and getting stuff ready for calls and ready for chat. And I'm thinking, there's a whole army of people in the background doing this shit. And all I got to do is get on and talk. I've got the easy job.
Yeah.
Seriously. I just appreciate them so much. There's the best name ever. Hiding in my box.
I don't know what I would do without Kristen. She's been
I can't wait to hug her neck.
Myself personally.
Mm-hmm.
So we should just do a whole show just piling on our appreciation.
We should.
A nonstop.
She would hate that.
I know it.
Anyway.
Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Kenneth and Dave's link trees are in the description. The Perspective is a show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central next week. I don't remember who the hosts are, but there will be two hosts here next week, guaranteed. And then this Thursday is the Pickup Line with Hannah Vaughn, where we talk relationships, dating, and sex. And as always, we're going to go ahead and join the Discord after show. So if you have a Discord and you want to chat with us, go into the YFNA Discord. Link is also in the description. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.